Welcome, this is Beyond the Here and Now. I'm your host, Antonia Lau. And this is the show that will take you a moment to wrap your heads around new thought, new thinking, new ideologies than you've been taught to think about yourself, the world around you, and your place in it. Today's topic, we're going to talk about community and the purpose for it. Now, what's interesting is we've seen a couple of strange years in the life on planet Earth. But this is not to say this is not uncommon at this time before this great change, this great shift, and the evolutionary journey going on between humankind, Earth, and the cosmos. But what we notice as we look around us is a disconnect. Unfortunately, a disconnect to God and the divine universe. No, I don't not say the word. I can say source, force, all that I am, creator, the great spirit, all that you would like to hear, but it's just God. You see, man invented 35,000 religions. That's the problem. God did not. We all on the planet, all of us, have a personal connection to the divine, one-on-one. All paths lead to the one. So we're going to stop the diversity at that moment and realize we are collectively all one. Now, this is essential because, as you've noticed, there's been a try in the last few years to separate us all. 6 feet apart, locked down in your house. Don't go here. Don't go there. You can't do this. You must do this. Cover your smile. Cover your face. Hide. Run. So you must understand there's only two choices on the planet. Fear and love. That's it. Just two choices. And everything we experience falls into one of those two choices. Now, unfortunately, I've said for years, fear does nothing but to block needed, guided, internal intuition at this time. And it is severely needed. So how does that relate to community? Because at this time, you've seen the powers that shouldn't be, so to speak, do that divide and conquer thing. There's always some turmoil they're getting you to look into or to take sides on, be it political, be it, like I said, with children, their indoctrination, school, courses, everything. They found a way to stir you up and off the beaten path. And that beaten path was the path we all had at one time, at all of our divine inception to God Creator. Now, this is important for you to understand why that deals with community. Because some of you listening have no clue who your neighbor is. Not upstairs, not downstairs, not beside you, not next door, not down the street. Not even in the space, the building, the block that you're on. How does it come to that? And since the advent of television, we saw the drop-off in family meetings and family dinners. Everybody went to their own area. Now it's their own TV, laptop screen, Xbox. So that dynamic of connection has been lost. Even with all the cell phones we have, instead of calling and speaking and feeling that energy of someone else's voice, someone else's presence connecting to our own voice and energies, we type it. So there's still this disconnect that's being forced on the human population at this time. But on a soul level, there's this deep learning to connect to one another, especially in the times forward. Now, my studies, of course, you may know, are vast and deep in the spiritual metaphysical world for years upon years and decades upon decades, and that will never stop. It's from life to life and between lives and more. But even after that severe or intensive, deep, rich body of studies, you never stop learning. You must never stop. But it was after decades of study that I came across one particular gentleman, and that was Edgar Cayce, the Christian mystic. And it happened in an unusual way one night, because in all my deep, rich studies of all the philosophies and doctrines and theosophies around the world, I had not come across his name, and I've been doing this for decades. And so that night was shocking, revealing. And of course, the next day I thought, let me prove this guy. He's probably just, you know, one of those commercial material. Let me just get rid of this. And I was going to try to disprove whatever this guy was about, Edgar Cayce. So I went and grabbed a book, and all of a sudden I saw material. I was, like I said, working with that discernment that I had gleaned in all my psychic development. We all have. It's supposed to be enhanced throughout our lives through our studies and that deep discernment as you continue to connect in your own way to the divine universe. I couldn't believe it was rich material, but more than rich, it beat every single piece of information out there. It covered the proper dates of all these events that they talk about in our Bible and Quran and biblical studies, and all the way back to the Torah, as well as the Hebraic studies. It was just amazing, the Egyptian studies, the Atlantean, the Lemurian studies. I was shocked at the detail, the minutia that was covered. So all those places where all these other philosophies and doctrines had just made a supposition, scientists had just made a supposed indication, this man was direct and accurate. So I tore into the material. 20-some, 30 books later, I thought, oh my God, it was amazing. He corrected all those things. And what I love about his work is he covered over 10,000 different topics, not just the medical portion, life portion, reincarnation, our purpose, the soul's development, our origin, everything about what we'd experience in the earth, in different places, in the US, in the world, in our cosmos. The accuracy was uncanny. To this day, I'm still in awe of the body of this man's work. And so being the hard and fast skeptic, I started to apply the work many decades ago, and I found its veracity, its importance to us, especially at this time. Now, Cayce talks about this particular time period. He says if we didn't get on the track of spiritual development or evolutionary journey that we're going on between 1958 and 1998, this probably wouldn't be as wonderful as it's going to be. But we did. 58 to 98, there's a yoga studio on every other corner. There's a psychic, a good one, hopefully a professional one, you can find in every place. There are subject matters you can go. There are meditation groups, there are camps, there are all kinds of places where you can get this information that wasn't existing on every other corner in the years prior to them. And what he said about this period was, these changes will, in capital letters, it was documented, come to pass. We had to be ready for them, otherwise it would have been sooner, he said. The one thing he said was, we have lost touch with family. That's the family of humankind. He also stated there would be a time coming when the bottom-ups, he called us, would rise up. He said it was never meant to have top-down control on the planet, not ever. It was never meant for that. He said the secret societies will be broken apart. He said it is this way in our world today because the bottom ups allowed it to happen. We did nothing to stop it. We were distracted. As today, there are billions of distractions in your household today, and especially around the world, sadly. So our focuses are short, not prolonged. The study is superficial, trite. Things are thrown out before they're completed. So this is an extremely important time period he talked about. He said the need for family, and family is your brotherhood of mankind. Do you understand that? Not just your immediate family of birth or origin. We are all family, you see. We were all created at the exact same time. And some of us have taken more journeys than the others. Others have, you know, decided their own free will choice and taken less. No one soul is better than another, you hear me always say, just different. But in those differences, you came and asked to come exactly at this time of the muck because you brought spiritual tools that you promised to apply to make this world the way it was promised. Cayce goes into detail and discusses the last three earth cataclysms that actually were dated. The first, he said, the last three experienced, especially by the continent that no longer is here in Atlantis. And no, it's not in the Sahara. It was in the Atlantic Ocean that it was named from, very large, and it had three different cataclysms hit it. The first was 58,000 BC, The second was 26,000 something BC. And the third and last one before what we're preparing for at this time is 10,007 or 600 BC. That would be 12,600 year cycle, which scientists are just, or few, are just getting a hold of. So we asked to come at this great time to complete our 3D work, growth, karma, and to leave the world better than when we came for generations to come. Now, many of us have promised to guide that by holding the light between Earth and humankind as we progress through these beautiful opportunities for great change, which is a normal natural cycle of humankind experiences on the planet and the planet's natural experiences for 4.5 billion years. Casey said she will do this. But in the meantime, we are supposed to be guided by our heart and souls to our community base and to have safe, sustainable communities through all this. And this is important. How do we build those communities? It has to be done in an integral way. Casey stated that we had promised to spiritualize the planet three times during those cataclysms, and we failed. And he noted that, of course, those were different civilizations, those thousands of years apart, 58 to 28 to 10,000 BC. That's a long distance, different civilizations, longer than we can even imagine between one another. So different ways of thinking, dressing, talking, being, you know, that kind of thing. He said we failed. And we promised God to spiritualize the planet those three times. He saw ahead that this time we would do so. I was so excited to see this because that is the way we're headed. So that spiritual component, not religious component, spiritual component is supposed to be encased in everything we do, from the people to our homes, to our communities, to our work, to our companies, to our corporations, to our being. Mind, body, and soul is that mandate of balance that we are all going to. Now you see this evolutionary journey taking place. Your thoughts and telepathy are picking up. You'll know things not knowing how, because you're increasing as we get to this level. People and their bad traits are coming up, so you can look at this so you can choose to get rid of it, not blame it on someone else or society. It's all you. And you correct those qualities inside self. And the best way to do this is with like-minded community. So today I'm very happy to have as a guest on my show today a very dear person I've been watching for many, many years, as he is the director, and you are welcome to come on now, of the Edgar Casey organization in Arizona for many years, as well as several other seats in his studies of the Casey material. And thank you very much. How are you? Thank
I'm
you.
doing quite well.
This is John Schroeder, everyone. And again, he's amazing with the way he's, how can I say it? Literally decimate, not decimates, but decimates what our belief system is today and restructures it in a way that Casey showed us it should be, gets rid of the garbage and gives up the good stuff. So, John, I recently heard you at a webinar that you were wonderfully doing on time and 3D and that sort of thing. But when I heard you stumble across how you came to the Casey material through the summer camp, I just perked up because all of a sudden you could see you, not that you didn't shine before, John, but you were amazing. Your heart just opened about the experience. I said, oh my goodness, this is community. This is exactly what I was trying to share earlier today and have been sharing in my talks and lectures for decades now. This sense of community that you experienced at the Edgar Casey summer camps. Okay. Now, John, I want people to know you're a gifted author as well as a speaker, a lecturer yourself, as well as you continue to practice and study the material in depth and then disseminate it for the rest of us, deconstruct our world belief system to the way it should be looked upon so we can improve and grow. So, can I please ask you to share with us, if you don't mind, because you were a teenager, and that's not easy for teenagers to go off to. So can you share a little bit about how that came about?
I can. It was back in, actually, I remember it well. It was the summer of 1969. The reason it's so easy to remember that date is I was actually at the camp when Neil Armstrong first stepped foot on the moon. So there we were, all of us gathered in the big chow hall, and it, on July 20th, we're looking at a 12-inch black and white television, which actually, that was pretty high tech considering all the surroundings we had at the time, because we were living in tents. We didn't have hot water. And, we were actually bathing ourselves in a stream that went all around the perimeter of the camp area. So it was just an amazing backdrop for such a technological achievement at the time. But how I wound up there was, it was a really tough time in life. I was in between eighth grade and ninth grade in school. And my parents were trying to figure out if they were going to stay in California, where I grew up, or relocate actually on the East Coast. And because it was going to take them a while to do an investigation on that, they made arrangements with the Edgar Casey organization, the ARE, or Association for Research and Enlightenment, and said, you have a summer camp in the western end of Virginia in Rural Retreat, and can we go ahead and place our two children, I have an older brother by 3 years, and place us in that camp while we try to see if we can relocate to the East Coast. And they agreed. So we were there for, 10 weeks. And from the time that I showed up, I was looking at it going, oh my gosh, it's not that there was a lot of technology when I was 13, but we, everybody had three television stations they could watch. And, there were actually no telephones on the property. And as I said, no hot water. We actually slept in cots and tents. And I thought, this is going to be a miserable experience for however long we were going to be out there. And I was soon proven wrong. I really was, because I was there about a week early before the camp had actually opened to the public. And so they put us to work right away, trying to get everything cleaned up and organized, et cetera. And then when the people showed up, everything really started to change. Because as you mentioned, those are very difficult years when you are a teenager, and especially in that, pivot going from junior high to high school in those years. And you have, everybody's just waiting for you to make a mistake, it feels like, and say, oh my gosh, look, you stepped out of the norm. And so now everybody can make fun of you. Well, it wasn't like that at all. I mean, when the people showed up there, it was like, this was the second year of the camp, by the way. So there were people that were having happy reunions that were there, and I'm watching it. Oh my gosh, they not only got along this year, they got along last year, and the good feelings carried over. So that was a good thing at first. And it was the first time in my life, because there was an incongruency between how I was being raised, because my mother was reading the biography of Edgar Casey, There Is a River, from the time she was pregnant with me. So I was raised on the Casey material, and I'm going, you know what? What you're telling me and what I'm experiencing out here in the real world are not the same. Nobody thinks like you do, Mom. And that kind of puts the separation in there. So when I wound up in the camp, it was the first time I had really been in a sustained place in which everybody was actually living up to the ideals that were given in the Edgar Casey readings. And that was, you said it very well, not living in fear, not living in selfishness, but living in love and respect and cooperation and patience for everybody that you come in contact with. Were we all on our best behavior? Heck yeah. But isn't that what we're trying to do anyway? So it quickly went away from being fake to being something that was absolutely real. And they were kept the Edgar Casey diet, which I have to just quickly, it's 80% alkaline, 20% acid, not a whole lot of meat. And so you're able to eat your own produce, because we're, as I said, in the rural areas of Virginia. And so they had a lot of produce available that was fresh into the area. And it was deliciously prepared. I hate to say it, my mother was not that good a cook. She could open a can, dump it in a pot, kind of warm it up for you, but that was the extent of it. Yeah. So I was actually getting not only to have a Casey diet, but I was getting to have the diet, and it tasted good, and I felt good.
Yes.
And the people were good. And then I have to say that I was watching, the camps were either a 1 or a 2 week period at a time. And sometimes there were family camps where it was parents and kids. And I got to see what it looked like to have parents and kids that had a similar background to me and how they interacted with each other. And then I got to see where it was just, one or the other, in which it was just kids all on their own that were just adults. And I got to watch all of those different or various interactions go through. I'd have to say, when you're starting out and you're doing the Casey exercises in the morning to go ahead and get your body stimulated, and then you go in for the meal, and everybody's very not only happy with each other, but looking forward to praying and sharing the meal. And then you go into I like cases Casey classes that had to do with dreams or reincarnation, karma, grace, all of the universal laws. And so there was a class, not too much, but a couple of classes a day to be able to give you a background in it. And come the evening was probably one of my favorite times of the whole thing. And that had to do with everybody after the evening meal would go get around a very large campfire. I'd say the ring itself was maybe 8, 10 feet in diameter. And it had a big big fire going out there. And the talented guitar players that would lead us in songs, and they were either inspirational, they could even be contemporary, as long as they, didn't have the awful lyrics in them. And the and so we were I really resonated to that. My whole family were musicians, and I really understood the music and resonated to it. And then that would end with a meditation, and you'd go to bed, and believe me, you had to have a flashlight because it was dark out there without any electricity. So, and that was basically the day. The fascinating, if we were to ever have a sporting event,
Yes.
it was like if we play volleyball, we would play, but it wasn't keeping score. It was making sure that everybody got to hit the ball. It
No
was
way.
seriously. It was like I go in, at first, and I go in there, and I'm 13 years old, and I go, "Oh, we're gonna kill them," being a competitive spirit or whatever. But all of a sudden, it turned in. No, it's not trying to win the game. It's trying to make sure that everybody is enjoying the activity, whether it's sports, whether it's capture the flag. It didn't matter what we did. Everything was done with the idea. And that was where I really changed some things in my own mind. I started to understand competition is a good thing when what it is intended to do is to bring the best, not out of you, but out of everybody that's involved in the thing. And the moment that you start to feel better or worse about yourself or somebody else, depending on the outcome of the game, you've lost sight of what competition is for. So I just want to give a indication of what it's like when you go into that environment and what kind of lessons you can wind up learning from that. So going through the whole thing, giving you a feel of that, my parents decided not to relocate, that they were going to stay in California. And we literally stayed at the camp until the very last day. They just pretty much had to throw us out because they were going to close the thing. It didn't matter because the next day I had to go back to school anyway. So I step off of this rural retreat camp. It was, so without technology, onto an airplane, fly all the way from the East Coast back to the West, and literally got out in the evening hours of Sunday, and Monday morning I'm supposed to be back in school. And I got dressed and went on to school, and then I got a face full of what life was like before I left. After having an entire summer of nothing but peace, love, cooperation, patience, forgiveness, fellowship. And then all of a sudden it was right back to a, and then I had the worst thing. I'd kept my hair short my whole life it up to that point, and I wound up having it grow out the entire summer. So it wasn't particularly long, but it was like, call it the Beatles of the 60s. And so my hair was longer than what was allowed. And oh my gosh, did everybody jump on me at school? I mean, the kids were literally pointing and laughing and going, "Look at that." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, I completely forgot about it." Guess what? They didn't have a lot of mirrors at rural retreat ARE camp. So I didn't even remember what I looked like. But when I went in there and it got confirmed, the administration literally suspended me, sent me home for not passing the dress code at the time. Obviously, that doesn't apply these days, but on home I go. And when I got there, my mother wasn't home yet. They had gotten in touch with her and let her know, so she was headed home. And Well, I just walked in the door, and I had, it was about a mile walk, so I was ready for some water, and I get a glass of water, and we always drank out of the tap back then. I know that's unheard of now, but I survived it. And the but I have to tell you, I was having nothing but mountain stream water for that entire 3 month period. And when I drink this water out of Anaheim, California, it really just turned my stomach. I thought of, oh boy, it was horrible. And that was about the time that my mother walked in, says, "What in the world happened? What, you had a dress code violation? What are you talking about? It's not like a wardrobe malfunction. It was a, mom, my hair was too long." And I said, "I got to tell you, that was the worst experience of my life, to walk out of that ARE camp and to go back into secular society, walk into school, and it's the first day of school, and to get that onslaught of just not only from the kids, but from the administration at the same time." I said, "Any way I can go back to ARE camp and just live there?" And my mother was pretty hardcore. She's kind of a disciplinarian that I kind of expected her to come back and say, "Suck it up and get back in there and do what you're supposed to do." She didn't. She took a very different attitude about this. She said, "What you experienced over that summer is so different from what anyone else has to go through in life." She says, "You have a choice now. You can, at some point in your life, make the choice to say, I'm going to go live in a commune where everybody treats each other like that and just shell yourself off from the rest of the world. Or, having had that experience, having seen what is possible to share with each other, go back into secular society and share it with them. Let
Bingo.
them know what is possible. Let them know this is how we should treat each other. This is, if we all did this, then we wouldn't have to worry if we are conforming or not. We can just be who we can be."
That's
And
the point.
that, it really was that. I mean, I don't think my mother ever gave me better advice in my life.
At 13, you took it. So
Yeah.
that's. But the point was that you made, you saw that just striking difference between the two worlds.
Oh, yeah.
And you went back to the world you thought was all right beforehand. Remember, you were abrasive to your mom. That stuff you're into, I'm not,
Yeah.
and then you found by living it, by actually absorbing in your life on a day-to-day basis that summer, that you had this profound experience of those two dichotomies. You really looked like, do I want this world? And I love that thought that you said you could, as she said to you, we're supposed to bring this information out and have the world this way. And it wasn't that the world is supposed to be kumbaya and commune kind of thing.
No.
It's the way we live our lives and how we respect and treat one another with these, I believe, the ideals, or what Casey would refer to as the fruits of the spirit, or those things that you'd learn by applying them during the
Yeah.
construction.
So true.
So in your experience, and I know this may be a long time ago, but I'm sure you've got a great memory. On your day to day in that structure, you said you would wake up in the morning and your first thing would be in the camp was?
Once we woke up, we all gathered. Just there was only one main building, the mess hall, as they called it, where we would eat. But there was a nice open field right next to it, and everybody would gather in that field, and we would have pundits in the various things, in particular with exercise. So there's a specific Casey diet and exercise program that he recommends. Although he says, do the one that you'll do daily. When they say, is this better than that? He goes, do the one you'll do daily and then you'll figure it out. So we would go down and go through a, just stretches mainly, as far as what to do in the morning to be able to get all of the muscle groups taken care of. And it would work up an appetite to be able to go into the morning meal, because a lot of people wouldn't be hungry and wouldn't want to eat breakfast. But this tended to kick your, the three square meals a day thing into gear.
So what can I ask what time you were waking up to do this and stretching and the exercise?
Oh, they had this very loud gong that would go off at 6:30 in the morning.
Okay.
Yeah,
So everybody was going to be there because they all heard it. No excuse.
and
And then
there wasn't anything else to do, so you might as well go on out and do the exercises.
after that, you, like I said, then you'd be prepared for the meal after the exercises and whatever pundit was there for the time, but you'd go in and eat that great food, you said.
Right.
And after that, you said you mentioned that there were a couple of courses that you would have in the day.
Yeah, they would do one in between breakfast and lunch. There would be a 2-hour session, and they pretty much had the same session set, I should say plural, sessions every day, that they would have the particular expert in whichever thing, and then you would go to that particular course, whichever one interested you the most. But that they expected you over that period of time to be able to attend each one of the courses, but you could take them in whichever order you wanted to. So there was I like the flexibility that that offered in order to be and say, okay, well, I haven't heard this, and you were a little more open to doing that, but you get to start with what you like the best.
And so the course structure was a repeated basis throughout the summer in different veins with different speakers on the subject matter. Is that what you're saying?
The reason that it was so fascinating to me is because each one of the, and again, there were either 1 or 2 week terms that were there. Each one of the sessions brought with it a different group of speakers, of people that were presenting the classes. So even if I were, say, getting dream interpretation 3 times over the summer, I got it from 3 different people. And that having those different approaches really kept it open and interesting. I mean, you can go online and YouTube, and I myself have my own Edgar Casey on dream interpretation, and so you can look at mine, or you can look at one from AERIE headquarters, or Macmillan Video has a number of them, and things like that.
It's interesting because people don't realize that that's what I call another layer of the onion. You see what I'm saying? You can go to a different astrologer every month and get something different, another layer about your life, deeper and deeper and deeper, but they couldn't all say in 1 hour. So here
Right.
you have every 2 weeks another set of speakers on that same topic from a different view, but still with the Casey perspective. And
Always.
so that's excellent, but I love the flexibility of the courses and classes. And then in the afternoon, after your afternoon session, what would happen after that, after your class in the afternoon?
That was usually the sports activities, if you will, as far as that there was always some kind of a fun activity that we would go out, whether again, just we would do the Red Rover thing. We'd play volleyball. We'd also play badminton. And then we would go swimming, although I live in Arizona for a reason, Antonia. I don't like the cold, and that darn stream was at 40 degrees out. So going swimming in that was not my favorite activity, but that was certainly available if you wanted to do it. So yeah, and we could still play baseball and all the rest of the normal sports too.
Then you had your evening meal that was well prepared from local farms and all that.
Yeah.
And so after the evening meal, you mentioned the campfire. And so what would take place at the campfire? Would they gather?
It was really about an hour and a half of nothing but just a fellowship of everybody sitting around that fire. And I, now that I look back on it, we had very talented people that were there conducting that thing. And luckily, they were there for the whole summer. So the two main people that were the guitar singer, player and singers were there for the entire 10 weeks that I was there. And so they were so talented, so good, very good at programming too, as far as how to keep the flow of, kind of building people up, building them up. And a lot of the songs were, were a lot of fun to, a John Jacob Jingleheimer Smith or something, if you remember all those things. So they would build the crowd up, and then they go ahead and start slowing it down when it was time to do the meditation at the very end before we'd break up and go back to our tents.
And it's interesting. And so meditation during that day was done at what time? Any point of
Well,
meditative?
there was a brief meditation after the exercise period before the morning meal, and there was more of an extended meditation, I would say 15, 20 minutes, which, considering when you have a lot of kids there, going longer than that is problematic. And so, yeah, there were 2 meditations a day, for the very shorter one in the morning and the longer one at the end of the campfire.
And so that was interesting to see a 13-year-old teenager's really adverse. Oh my God, this place, we're going where? That wasn't a happy moment, I'm sure, when your mom and dad made that decision. But you and your brother just, you had no choice at 13, so you do what
Didn't. No, we were going wherever they told us to. I can give you a humorous perspective of the my mother had maintained a Edgar Casey study group in her home, starting from the time I think I was 5 years old. And the first time that we had one, my brother and I were back in our in our room, and she came back and said, "I need you to be really quiet now because we're all going to go out and meditate." And I didn't know what that meant. Actually, I have my own definition because my father had a euphemism of meditation meant that he was going to take the evening paper and go retire to the bathroom for a while. And so she said, "We need you to be quiet. We're going to meditate." And my answer to her response was, "How are you going to get all those people into the bathroom?" So when you grow up in that kind of a family, you just it's all I ever knew. You hear the word meditate, that's what I meant. It grew. By the way, don't ever try to teach a 6-year-old to meditate, or at least this 6-year-old, because I trying to keep a very active mind focused on and listen and focus on the silence and listen to this. No, it just wasn't going to happen. And it made me a little standoffish of meditation until that summer, as a matter of fact.
Really, so
Yeah.
you just kind of you found it. It sounds like you found it easy to go into the flow at the camp, at the summer camp. So, and it's not. We know about church camps and Boy Scout and Girl Scout camps, but this is quite different because here you were getting brilliant information based on the Casey material in a way that no one gets in their lifetime, but
Yeah.
all in this beautiful chance for summer. So, the gift was all this brilliant knowledge that most never realize or know, you know.
I was really lucky to have early on, if I can diverge for just a moment, I was about 9 or 10 when I was when I would get sick when I was much younger. I had a real problem of it would take me out for about 3 or 4 days, and I'd have a severe sore throat. And so I was on the first day of this, and luckily, my mother and her study group had a laying on of hands healer, who she brought. She said, "Hey, can you come back and help me with my son? Because he's going into some pretty bad stuff here." Which he did. They came in, and I wasn't happy because I was already asleep, and that was some of the rare relief that I could get when I get in that mode. And she explained what they were going to do, and I'm like, "Yeah, whatever." And so I'm just lying there, and I could feel when he put his hands over my throat, I could actually feel the warmth. He wasn't touching me, but I could feel the warmth coming off of his hands in doing this. And several minutes go by, and I try not to swallow because it just hurt so bad when I did. Finally, I couldn't stop it, help it anymore, and I swallowed, and I had no pain. I mean, not just some pain. I had no pain whatsoever. And the important thing about that was that as I tried to swallow again and again and it didn't hurt, finally I said aloud, "It doesn't hurt anymore." I was astounded. And their response to that was so important because it solidified in my mind that all of this stuff is real. It isn't just that you read it in the readings or somebody else had it happen to them. I had what I would have considered, and I was 9 or 10 years old at the time. I had a miracle healing. Their response was probably the most important thing that happened in that. And that was they came back and said, "Of course it doesn't." When you think about that, if they'd have gone, "Oh my God, look what happened." If they're as surprised as I am, then all of a sudden I'm like, "Oh, okay, this was kind of weird." But when they came back and said, "Of course it doesn't." That
The direct
locks it in. That really locks it in. I'm going, "Oh, okay, this is how it's supposed to be. And I'm the one that doesn't, I shouldn't be so impressed with this. I should just know this is how it was intended to be."
Yes. And this is the key that these are the things that I have always believed, and that's what I would like to see in communities around the world adopt, is these qualities and modalities taught from the I teach a method of quantum bioresonance healing energy similar to this, but it has a 95% cure rate with cancers, who I learned from, like I said. And so this is to share that knowledge so they can use it. But it really is essential. And I'm a hard and fast skeptic. So, I question everybody. I'm thinking, what the heck? Prove it to me. But it's always been proven. This is what I want to teach. I thought if I had known this as a child, I could have healed my little friend's, sore knee, or they run and fall, or they hurt their toe. I could have, as a child with pets or whatever. So it's
Right.
progressed by the time we become adults. This is natural, and the ability and the affinity for it, if they choose, is right there. These are some of the six senses we talk about, or we learn that we have, but nobody else discusses after we learn that there are six. not just my senses. And this is part of the human condition that's been suppressed. And what I love about your time at the Casey Summer Camp, at the time at age 13, the hardest, most tumultuous time, you know, when the chakras are opening and rebellion sets in and, oh my God, I have to be an adult by 18, you know, that kind of thing. So all those things happen. And here you are in the best situation you could possibly be, this envelope, like you said, of love, and each and every day inundated with people that felt that. I do want to ask, how many people at the largest number were at the camp at any one time?
Probably would have been the family camps where you had the adults and kids together. Wouldn't have been more than 50.
Okay, more than 50.
Yeah.
And science knows, or scientists have found out, sociologists actually have found out, that we humans in our lifetimes, we usually relate to approximately 150 people that have an impact on our lives. And so communities of that size are normal. And I love the look of intentional communities around the world. One of my premier communities that I studied and got a chance to go to just a few years ago was Finhorn. And I had studied the opportunity for them. And they're a bit larger than that. But my whole point is, that's 50 people that you got that very strong, generous energy with and through. And that entire summit, and that schedule of how you did things and how you viewed. I love the flexibility you said in the classes and the courses that you were able to study and to learn. And so that's an important step for people to kind of get wrap their heads around. But again, can you imagine children if they had this, you know, like I said, this opportunity, and what the world would be like today?
As with everything, probably the challenge, because it was new back then. Remember, I was there for the second year. Mm-hmm. And I think whenever you run into a unique circumstance like that, to be able to keep it going in perpetuity is very dependent upon the leadership within that organization. I mean, there was a separate organization for the camp than there was for the ARE headquarters in Virginia Beach on the east end of Virginia. And I think it makes all the difference who is running the place in order to be able to maintain all of the wonderful things that I talked about. Because it'd be real easy to let that go. I mean, you know, say, oh, I'm so busy filling this paperwork out. Let's not do the exercise and meditation this morning. Oh, we can skip the morning class. Oh, we can, and, you know, you can just say, isn't this place enough as it is? Because it was gorgeous. It was beautiful to just be out there in the mountains of Virginia. And I am so far away from everything. Yeah, it really was. I mean, it took you a mile to get to the road that accessed it. And so, I mean, that's how remote it really was.
So beautiful quality of concentrated effort. And the interesting thing is you got to enjoy it. Plus you went with your brother, which is usually difficult for siblings sometimes as well. And so you were stuck there with your brother all summer, you know, that sort of thing, depending on the relationship you guys had. But in other words, could have been a harder time. You could have shunned, turned away, didn't want to come, found a way to not participate.
Well, you know, that you bring up an interesting point, because I never really talk about him in this. And my brother, having been in the same place as me, would describe that same summer in almost opposite terms. And the reason being, he had his first girlfriend at that point. Remember, he's older. And so he was being torn away from the love of his life, who, you know, it didn't last very long anyway after he got back. But so there he was, feeling like his life had been brought to an end. And he had such a sour attitude over the whole thing. Instead of leaving him as a camper, they actually put him on the work crew. So he was literally working that whole time. And he was just getting a worse attitude as things went over the whole thing. So I had probably one of the best summers of the best summer of my whole life. And he had one of the worst ones. Is he's thinking of everything that he missed out on instead of what he was able to participate in.
Wow. Well, interesting perspective. And so I'm glad that brought that up. And that's true. And that's basically how we have a choice of emotions each and every day. And unfortunately, you know, we may choose either to stay in that mode, and all he was pining after his first love, you know. And
There was that's probably the first time that I, even at that young age as a teenager, that I grabbed on to what is the most basic difference between the Edgar Cayce readings and the philosophy they teach and almost all of the other theologies, religions, ways of thinking out there. And that is, All the other religions tend to have these are the tenets that you need to hold to. And when you do, you can graduate from the earth and go on to the greater, heaven, nirvana, whatever you want to call it, that's elsewhere. And Casey, readings are heaven is a state of mind. And until you can find it here on earth, you might as well not go look for it anywhere else. And that is so clear between what my brother went through and what I went through in that summer that it really demonstrated it in three-dimensional terms.
Interesting, I have the backdrop here for the world because we need this quality in our world. And that was my whole point to bring up the world today. But it was that essential quality I noticed is missing. I don't know how many years it's been when you realize the person doesn't even know the name or first name of who lives there or who. It's just kind of a sad thought that that disconnect has happened, especially at a time now that our collective consciousness is growing. And that means that energetic fields extends 3 feet on either side of each one of us. And as it's growing through the cosmos and evolutionary changes happening through our world right now, from how can I say it, planetary, cosmologically, spiritually, mentally, physically, all those changes are happening as we get to this new gradient at this time. It's amazing that all this energy is inside of us. And so when we're around one another, I always say it kind of rubs off onto the next person. And so they're inspired. People have to open at their own right time, as Casey says, their way and their right time. Your brother wasn't ready to open. But you went on to carry it through, it feels like, John, as a tenant through your life, not just as a tenant, but as a good foundation to live your life and move from. In other words, stand as a stabilization point. And with these same things that you gleaned in that summer, you have used them throughout the lifetime. And as an adult, you can see
Well,
the.
that
Go ahead.
I was going to say it didn't manifest immediately. It isn't that I ever did anything other than try to live up to the ideals, to the principles that are in the Edgar Casey readings. But for I had to get a whole lot older before I could wind up saying I have been able to have these successes with it so that I can now teach it. And
Yeah.
that and so it, I think too often we if you have the skills to be able to teach that we jump into that maybe even too early in some people's cases where you don't have the foundation to really be as good an instructor who has actually lived it and been able to have your trials and tribulations and successes. Because if there's, you probably noticed that in this interview, I have a way of being able to say, here's the concept and here's the story in my life that is able to go ahead and validate it, how it worked for me.
I relate to that quite well.
I bet.
I do the same. And it's a way to show that all humankind can have this experience. If I and you can, that means they can too. We're just one of them. So they can see that difference. And that's the key. And that isn't that what we're supposed to do? We're supposed to share the knowledge. So.
I have had the unique because my family got involved with the Edgar Casey organization, the ARE, so early.
Yes.
My mother kind of was the West Coast headquarters for them whenever they would come out in the area to do conferences. So, I got to know Hewlin Casey, Edgar Casey's oldest son, very well. Gladys Davis Turner was staying at her house when, that was the stenographer, the
Yes.
scribe who took down the readings in shorthand and typed them all out. I got to know those people. And I will say, I remember asking Hewlin one time, in fact, it was my 21st birthday. I wound up just going to dinner with him on my own because he was in the area and nobody else came. I don't know what happened. He might have told him, stay away. I got to talk to this kid. I said, what must it have been like to have been raised by Edgar Casey? Good heavens. I mean, and he goes, oh, it's a tremendous advantage. And he goes, and it doesn't keep you from making any of the mistakes. I got a glimpse as to what I have received because my mother wound up being, very well known within the ARE, and people are saying, "Oh, you had your mother, Helen Ruth Schroeder, wound up being, the person that raised you. What a tremendous advantage!" And you're going, "I guess so." I didn't seem to help a lot, but it does really solidify, the things a lot more clearly for me. I can say one thing in my life that is very different from what most people. I've never once experienced a dark night of the soul
Beautiful.
at any time that I've had. Have I had low points? Oh, you betcha. But at no time did I ever go out there and go, the universe isn't friendly. God isn't on my side. I am not loved with an everlasting love. None of those thoughts ever went through my mind. And I will say, being raised within the Casey philosophy of everything is eventually going to work out, but it works out quicker if you get with the program. So I always looked at it from that perspective.
Now you are an author as well, and inspired by the works of the foundation and Casey's
Oh,
work.
yeah.
And can I ask, how many books have you written, by the way?
Seven.
Seven different books, and
Yeah.
you have a couple out now, I think, that.
Yeah. In fact, I have my wife drop a couple off here. I'll take them in chronological order. Let's see if I can bring that up. Think
Let
I
not
got it in
your
there.
trouble. The Universe Is Friendly by John Schroeder.
There you go.
Okay.
The available on Amazon. If anybody doesn't want to pay for the book and you still want to read it, if you can drop me an email, I'll send you a PDF copy of it. I am not trying to get rich off it. I'm just trying to get the word out. But the point, this particular book, in fact, you would hear the anecdotes. There are about maybe 30 chapters in it in all, and I pulled about 15 anecdotes out of my own life, some of what you've heard here today, to demonstrate each one of the chapters in there. And I mean, I don't shy away from the tough subjects. And it's in a Q&A format so that you wind up being able to have, this is the question I asked, and I literally would just go into a meditative state and go into a Q&A session on somewhat like inspirational writing. So I talk about the nature of God, preexistence of the soul, abortion and suicide, prosperity, business, sexual morality, war, religion, politics, and science, bigotry, relationships of all type, the Book of Revelation, and more. So each one of those is a topic that really gives, and I'll say this jokingly, but nobody has the exact take on the Edgar Casey readings, myself included. What you're getting is the gospel according to John Schroeder of what the Edgar Casey readings are about. And it's I'd say if it's a help for anybody, it's that I have taken the time to be able to read them. And if you've never read a straight reading right off of the press from Edgar Casey, it's not easy to follow. So I have done it enough that I wind up having not only my take, but the practice to be able to translate the wording. That's the syntax is more like the King James Bible than anything else, as far as how it comes through.
And that
The
was the,
go
he
ahead.
actually, because so people will know, he actually read the Bible for every year of his life, all the way through, once a year, 67 sometimes before. I think he started at age 9 or something like that, reading it. That was his thing. But you're saying it, I noticed something, John, as you read it, the material might be stiff, and then all of a sudden there's a trigger, first or second or third chapter, the light bulb goes off, you're able to devour. And even in this way, what you've done for us is put it into way, but isn't that the way the work is supposed to be? It's supposed to talk to you, and then you're supposed to apply it.
Yeah, with all of the YouTube videos on our Edgar Casey Arizona channel, we start out with a disclaimer every time. Just like I said here, saying, you know what, this is not the official Edgar Casey answer of what all of this stuff means. It is a personal interpretation. And what I like to finish that with is what this does is causes you to start your own investigation and research into it. What better outcome could you possibly have in it? And the you talked about I mentioned that I've written seven books. Three of them are this one.
That's the Hall of Records trilogy. Very good. And can you tell us a little bit about that with
That's
the
a big book.
Oh, that's a big
Yeah,
one.
I'd say, as a matter of fact, I had to in having this one done on and on Amazon, I actually had to cut things like my biography out in order to just get it down to the minimum number or maximum number of pages in order to get the thing to be printed in paperback. What happened was is that I had written, let's see, my first three books wound up being very much like self-help material, as I had mentioned with the Let Not Your Heart Be Troubled and a Q&A format and so on. But the Hall of Records trilogy was my first foray into being able to try to be entertaining while also giving this same information in the Casey material. So I wound up in the Hall of Records trilogy. I'm sure it's probably come up at other points in your podcast of saying there are three places on the earth, the Edgar Cayce said, you will find the records of Atlantis and far back history beyond that. And one of them was in Egypt, one in the Yucatan, and the other one just off the Bahamas or the Bimini Islands. And I have three separate books that I write with just the protagonists of the book going to search for the Hall of Records in each case. And in each one, they start out in Egypt, and it's not a deal breaker to find out, yes, they do find it. And it does offer, an interesting change of perspective in life and changes life on Earth to the better. And then we find out, but that isn't good enough. So we go to the second book, in which they go to the Yucatan and they go to find again another Hall of Records. And now the first one was unlimited energy. They find out the technology for unlimited food and pure water. So now you've taken care of energy. Everybody's going to be able to eat and drink. We're still not good enough. We're still going to get in each other's faces. And so the third one has to come around, and I'll let you figure that one out because that's the end of the book and I don't want to ruin that. But it's an interesting take to be able to take all of the concepts, and I don't want to mean 100% of them, but you get the information that comes through the readings as far as what is the worldview, what is reincarnation all about, what is karma and grace all about, the law of attraction, and you put these into a novel form, into a fictional story that's literally telling you the truth. It's almost like a fictionalized history. And I have another book that I don't want to bring it up because it'll make everybody want to go buy it before they would want to buy the trilogy, but it's actually a prequel. So you take all of the major characters that were in the trilogy, and it goes back to before the beginning, when they were souls, and what life was like then. And
Awesome.
then it goes ahead and says, here's how we get into the manifest universe. Here's how we get into Earth. Here's where Emilius or Jesus came along. Cayce says he had 30 incarnations. And I use those incarnations to lay out where we all went astray and how we will get out of it.
Yes. Oh, that's good to know. So
Yeah, we do get out of it.
finally, he saw we do this.
There
And
you go.
so we're in this beautiful period now where we're working through this to the other side of that. And so people just want to, I want them to keep faith and hope in themselves. I want them to look into your books that you've offered because it's a nice palatable way to absorb some of the material as well. Can't wait for that third one though. That's important for me. And so, because that's that focus is to try to get people there in the highest ways possible for humankind. So you said it, they hit the nail on the head. It feels like 90, years down here, but when you were talking about your timing in 3D world, but it's we've been here for eons and still going through this concept. And all of us started. We all took little jagged tours and our
Yeah.
own free
We'll
will way.
take more.
Yep. But it is going to, this, how can I say, it was absolutely fantastic to see that it is going to improve because people see now that this is the end. It's not the end, it's the beginning of a whole new phase. And this is what they have to be prepared for, this beautiful quality inside themselves to feel and sense deeper. Cayce said those things we're going to be recognizing now. Especially at this time, the same concepts that the founding fathers offered in 1776. He said those were not mere words. He
No.
said those were an eternal statement. He said soon it'll start in the US and then can continue to be cascading around the entire world, the thoughts of brotherhood, compassion, and relief to others. And I thought, boy, don't we see that now? We need that now. We know. But this is how we're going to be going toward, and it always was supposed to have been this way. So hopefully.
When you talk about Cayce, it really throws people off when he says Russia will eventually be the light of the world. But he also is very clear about the same people that has the concept of calling each citizen comrade is going to get there because of their friendship with the United States, who has In God We Trust on our currency. So to be able to say, if you can take that everybody is brotherly love of comrade and figure out how In God We Trust, since it's largely not a God-fearing society, if you want to put it in the vernacular, the idea is once they start figuring out the oneness of all things to go along with what they already understand as their neighbors and treating everybody equally, I think that is going to be a very powerful thing. Now, it's not going to happen next week either.
Done. But you know what's interesting is that on that thought, even what he goes on to say about China, that China will end up be the largest Christian nation or country in the world.
Yes.
With the turmoil that they've been had to endure over the last, especially a couple of years, that their mindsets are being changed and altered. So what perhaps the governments are, Casey said, those are, like I said, it was never to be top-down control in government. Supposed to be we the people. And so now you can see this change happening not only to humankind, you realize this is the way it should be. And for them, after all these years of never, having religion, it was stamped out in the 40s. And
Yeah.
so it's an essential thing that people realize that it's not a religious belief, it's a Christed consciousness belief. A collective consciousness that happens.
Yeah.
All of us are part of the one.
Yeah,
No.
beautifully said.
So it's.
The I love one thing in the it winds up being that I get a question often from people that say, well, when is the 1,000 years of peace, the millennium, going to occur? And I look at them and I say, I think we're already in it.
We are.
And open, appreciative of the choir here as far as that goes. But they're going, how can you possibly say that when you see what's going on in, over in Europe and this and that and all these? And I said, if you anecdotally want to go ahead and point to things that are not going beautifully, I said, let me ask you, when did the Renaissance begin, the Renaissance period? And they're going, oh, somewhere between 1450, 1500. And I'm going, exactly.
Bingo.
Yeah, give me a date when the Renaissance started. So, well, it started between in that 50-year period. And I'm going, well, okay, we're in the beginning of the millennium. And if you want to pick a date, go ahead and do it. But most people will probably go, 2000 to 2050, and that'll be fine when you're after the fact. But if you're right there in the middle of it, you want a date and you want to be able to point to a specific, action that caused that to occur. I said, it's as you were talking about with China, I think China has all of the seeds already planted in terms of being a Christian nation,
Yes.
and it's being repressed at the moment, and it'll just be at a beautiful explosion when it finally comes to pass. But it doesn't mean that it's not down there and growing beneath the soil at the moment. So, yeah,
Exactly.
same thing with the millennium.
Exactly. People to real even if we do it in esoteric or spiritual astrology, what you'll see is that period entered into that Aquarian age last December and then again this past December, and we're going right into it. So there's work to be done. So each person, each one of us has promised work on self. And work for the rest of the world to inspire the rest of the world to grow too. We've got to help our brothers and sisters. I always like to say, everybody we see at Walmart has to make it too. It's not just.
Yeah. Boy, I've seen those emails. I'm kidding. Casey is very clear on well, actually, put it in these terms. We souls have been here for millions and thousands of years, and will still continue to be here for hundreds and thousands of years to come. That doesn't mean just because you go into the millennium that everybody just translates or whatever the Christian, forget what the rapture. I was blanking on the word for him. It's not like everybody disappears all of a sudden, but it's almost like it's inevitable. Once you get to that point and have that critical mass, it is going to manifest. He also says, be very glad that you are on the earth at this time to be a part of setting that pattern for the beautiful future that lays in front of us. So we are very blessed to be on the earth and to be part of that group that is ushering that in. Because I'll tell you, I want all of the information, the Edgar Cayce readings and the study group program to be available to us when I come back.
That's the truth. And I have to be here for a long time during this life. That's okay, I promise. But all of us that asked to incarnate here at this time were granted permission by the divine and literally to come. We were all excited. Yes, we get to go there. Now, every day, it doesn't always feel that way, but we were excited about being allowed to incarnate at this time on the planet to witness, see, and allow those changes to come pass and be a part of those changes. So people have to understand, nobody forced anyone to be here. We asked that greater soul growth. And he also says the veil is being pulled away. So see, we can see all the garbage so in ourselves and the world. So we will never allow that to happen on the planet again. And that's
Right.
the whole point of this. So as you mentioned, the law of grace, the law of karma, the law of attraction, there wasn't just one law, sorry, one law, the famous, you know, or the most trendy one, was several of those divine universal laws Dr. Wallace Wallace taught in over the early 1900s to the rest of the world, and before then it has come through several civilizations. So on that note, I want people to realize that the rest of the divine universe is looking at us as rock stars, because we have the guts and the courage to come exactly at this time to make that quintessential difference in the experience on the earth plane for here on out. And I am very honored and proud to be here. Well, today, I want to thank you, John Schroeder, for coming with us today. You, tell them the website, or that they can see or reach your work at, or if they want to go and ask.
The biggest outreach that we have is through through YouTube.
Okay.
We do have a Twitter channel as well, which is at AZ Casey. Casey is spelled C-A-Y-C-E, by the way. Some people spell it like Casey at the bat. It's not. C-A-Y-C-E. And the YouTube channel is called Edgar Casey Arizona, spelled out as in the name of the state here in the United States. The if you needed to reach me directly, it's just Edgar Casey AZ at Zmail, or Gmail, not Zmail, gmail.com. Edgar Casey AZ, like you're short for Arizona, at gmail.com. And I'm happy to answer. Usually you'll get an answer back from us within 24 hours.
Perfect. Now, as my gift for you coming on the show today, I would like to offer you the opportunity for a little mini reading on the air. My real readings are 1 hour long. I can't do that for you. But in this, I'll ask you to pose a question that's answerable by yes, no, or maybe. I actually see and hear, believe it or not, the person's guide, guardian angel. I am psychic, clairvoyant, clairaudient, in fact, all the clairs, clairboosting, clairsentient, all those. But I like the confirmation that your particular guide has. It's not grandma, grandpa passed over. It's a highly evolved soul that you chose between you, God, and the divine universe prior to your incarnation in the earth plane. They know your life path and everything about it, and they want us to achieve. The number one quality about that guide is they love us more than anyone ever will on the planet, because they truly know what love really is. So that is how I work. Each one of us is quite different. I only use the tarot, astrology, numerology, palmistry as a third point of reference. And people didn't realize this particular deck has a cross on the back. But when it's in inception, when it was built, it was actually built to open the God's eye, a pineal gland to God and the divine universe, to hear the concept. So I only use this as a third point of reference. So if you will help, I'll help you phrase the question if you're having problems with that. But let's what that question would be for me today.
Probably I am constantly trying to figure out the best outreach, whether it is as an author, whether it is as a doing the YouTube videos, or should I be trying to make more of a outreach like we're doing right here, whether it be on podcasts or going on tour for the ARE Edgar Casey organization as a speaker across the nation for them. What would be the best and greatest helpful and hopeful use of my time in order to be able to do that?
So you named three arenas. I want you to put them in your own mind as to number one, number two, and number three. We're only going to ask about one of those.
Not okay.
Do you have a firm one in your mind?
Yeah.
Okay, you're not asking either. You want to non-verbally think it to the divine God creator in your own way. Would it be best for the greatest, highest good of my soul to go on focus number, and then you think it to the divine God creator in your heart as I shuffle, concentrate.
Doing it.
Whenever your heart says stop shuffling, just say stop shuffling. Would it be best for the greatest, highest good of my soul to enter the focus and number, and you state that to God, see it, how that would be, and then say stop shuffling whenever your heart would say stop.
Stop.
1 second, please. Give me a moment as I lay them out. And my clients are doctors, lawyers, attorneys, VPs of companies and corporations for many, many years because of the level of accuracy. But this is always your free will. So I will tell you the answer that they show and tell me. And during a reading, they literally put me in your body. I'll see it through your eyes. I'll feel it as you would physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally. They'll pull me out back and forth. And then I have a third point of reference through the tarot, astrology, numerology, palmistry, graphology, and the way God intended it to be utilized in the highest ways only, always. And so on the pathway you're headed, John, I'm going to have to let you know on the thought that you were thinking at this point, the path you were headed, it is best not to. The answer is no, they're saying. A couple other things, and there's a reason why. It shows me you've got all the seeds you've been planting for this direction, but it would move best not to go in this particular, that of the three, not this particular one. I'll take it off the air about the other one for you when we go, but it shows me God and the universe's influence on this. It's showing me you're still in an indecisive state about it. In fact, you've been taking kind of naps and asking them to help guide you, making sure when you wake up, you'll get some sort of tangible proof. But it does show me here, and even coming up, there may be a tendency not to sleep very well, wondering this at night, should I go this direction, that direction, waking up. So blocking, when we wake up, left brain blocking the divine input that's coming in the sleep state coming up. So it shows me you will be content, but they said, don't be dismayed by one particular guy that tells you one thing, because it's not true, they said. It also shows me you do have a choice of a couple of things. And it shows me on the pathway you're headed, this would be one of the lesser choices. It also shows me on the pathway you had it. Month and day of your birth, please.
9/5/55.
Okay, it shows me that would be, so it shows me here on the pathway headed, a gentleman that could have water sign in his birth chart, very strong sun, moon, or rising, is not in good aspect to you doing so as well. So on the pathway headed, and we'll cover it off the rest off the air, but I want to thank you very much. This is no for this point, but I like that you had two more options. So that means you're in the right parameter. So we'll work on that after the year. But I want to wish you a thank you for coming on with us today and sharing the information. They have your information. I'll note in the information as well for your books, as well as how to hear more from you. And I want to thank you, John, very much for coming today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Thank you. And I want to wish the audience all the best. Thank you.